Hello, listeners. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will not hear elsewhere. Today, we're very fortunate to have two wonderful guests on the show. For the first hour, from 2 to 3 p.m., we'll be having Dr. Michael Sala on the show from Hawaii. And on the second hour, from 3 to 4 p.m., we'll be having one of New York's most famous and well-known psychics, Catherine Mitchell, coming to us live from Long Island, New York. I wanted to tell you first, before we start, I always want to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been doing the web design for the program, and without her help, I could not do the show, as well as the wonderful support of Ann Nelson, a friend of mine at Walla Walla Community College, as well as my earthly and angelic family. I wanted to tell you, too, that we'll be taking calls at the bottom of the hour, and for those calling in with questions, you can call in for questions with Dr. Sala between 2:30 to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at area code 425-373-5527. I wanted to tell you briefly, 1 week from today, we will be having Dr. Masuro Emoto live by telephone from Tokyo, Japan. Dr. Emoto is the world's most famous water scientist, and he's found that human thoughts do affect the molecular structure of water and other materials. He'll be on the program from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. That same day, from 2 to 3 p.m., we will have one of Europe's best spiritual healers, Abby Nguyen, coming to us live from Dublin, Ireland, and she'll also be open to questions as well. Next month, we will have some very famous and well-known people on the show, including Laura Eisenhower, the daughter of the late President Dwight D. Eisenhower, to talk about UFOs. Uri Geller, the world's foremost remote viewer, coming to us live by telephone from London, England. In September, we will also be having James von Prague on the show at the end of September. For those of you who are in the Seattle area, I will be at a psychic fair tomorrow on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 12223 Northeast 116th Avenue, next to Sherry's Restaurant in Kirkland. And then on Saturday, July 26th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., I'll also be giving psychic readings and a lecture at the Boeing Employees Parapsychology Club at the Kent Commons at 525 North 4th Avenue in Kent, Washington. Also, too, I wanted to tell you that this November, from November 21st to November 23rd, I will be hosting a psychic fair and rejuvenation workshop at Fort Warden in Port Townsend, Washington. For those interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or just give me a call anytime at 1-888-879-8339. Dr. Sala, are you there?
I am, Ted. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Well, it goes without saying, it's probably a beautiful day there on the Big Island of Hawaii, isn't it?
It's always beautiful being here. The weather's great for getting out and enjoying the outdoors.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Dr. Sala, you have an incredible background. You've been researching UFOs for many years. You have you've written several wonderful books, including the most recent book, Kennedy's Last Stand, involving Eisenhower UFOs, MJ-12, and the JFK's assassination last year. And you document the tragic efforts by President Kennedy to share more widely the truth about UFOs and extraterrestrial visitation. You've also written several books about disclosure topics, which I'd love to get into with you on the show now. You're an internationally recognized scholar in international politics, conflict resolution, and U.S. foreign policy, and you're the author and editor of four additional books, including The Hero's Journey Toward a Second American Century, Essays on Peace, Why the Cold War Ended, and Islamic Radicalism, Muslim Nations, and the West. You've authored more than 70 articles, chapters, and book reviews on peace, ethnic conflict and conflict resolution, and you've also held academic appointments in the School of International Service and the Center for Global Peace, American University in Washington, D.C., the Department of Political Science, Australian National University in Canberra, Australia, and the Elliott School of International Affairs and George Washington University in Washington, D.C. You have a PhD in government from the University of Queensland in Australia and an MA in philosophy from the University of Melbourne in Australia. You've also conducted research and fieldwork in the ethnic conflicts in East Timor, Kosovo, Macedonia, and Sri Lanka, and organized peacemaking initiatives involving mid to high-level participants from these conflicts. And before we go on, Dr. Sala, you have a wonderful background, and recently you had a ceremony in Hawaii welcoming benevolent extraterrestrials to Hawaii. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure, Ted. Well, I live in the Kalapana area of the Big Island of Hawaii, and actually there is an organization representing the reinstated Kingdom of Hawaii. I mean, more accurately, there are indigenous Hawaiians that have reclaimed their sovereign rights as a kingdom from the United States. So they are part of different islands coordinating in creating really a new government, which is the reinstatement of the previous Kingdom of Hawaii that had been usurped and annexed by the United States back in the end of the 19th century. So it's very exciting working with a group of indigenous people who are wanting to reclaim their sovereignty and express their right to self-determination, and who are also open and receptive to the information about our star visitors or extraterrestrials. That they recognize that extraterrestrials are a part of Hawaiian traditions and legends, not unlike many other indigenous cultures. They have oral legends going back many centuries and millennia even, talking about a time when the star visitors were visiting and interacting and basically a part of the creation of the Hawaiian people. So it's very gratifying to be working with such a group of people that not only are embarked on a really noble quest to reclaim their sovereign rights, but also are open to this information that extraterrestrials are visiting us, they're part of our traditions, and we want to bring that out into the public arena.
Fascinating. Now, you wrote a wonderful book called Kennedy's Last Stand, Eisenhower UFOs, MJ-12 and the JFK Assassination, which was released, I believe, last year, on the 50th anniversary of his assassination. And it's an incredibly interesting book. How did you get interested in that subject, by the way?
Well, I mean, I remember very clearly back in November 22nd, 1963, that fateful day. I was only 5 years old, and I remember my father coming into the backyard where I was playing and telling me about this great American president who had just died, and he started crying. He started crying his eyes out, and I thought, what's this? What's going on? I mean, I didn't know anything about politics, obviously, at that time. But that left a kind of really powerful impression on me that, you know, who is this man that had this kind of incredible effect on my father back in those days? And that was the first time I'd seen my father cry. And so, you know, that kind of lived with me. And, of course, once I embarked on an academic career, I thought of the Kennedy assassination in pretty much in the terms of most people who are exposed to mainstream news accounts, that it was a tragic outcome of a lone gunman who was kind of nuts, really. But then once I got involved in the ET issue, it started opening me up to another perspective, a perspective that was basically really mind-blowing, that Kennedy not only was aware of the UFO issue, but actually wanted to regain control or establish a presidential oversight of this, that this was an issue that he was widely interested in, and that actually had a direct impact on his presidency, and in fact directly contributed to the assassination, as I detail in the book. You know, looking at the various stages of his presidency, and even the time before he became president, when he was serving with U.S. Naval Intelligence, and he became a congressman. That even in those early periods of his life, he was exposed to this information, which is amazing. You know, when you first introduced to that, that Kennedy knew back as far then that there is visitation of our world by these extraterrestrials, and that the most senior levels of government are aware of it and are keeping it from the public. And Kennedy was aware of this information back then, so that when he became president, it was natural that he would want to find out all he could about it. And having all the powers of the presidency, you would think this would be information that he would be easily able to gain. But in fact, as I detail in the book, it turned out very different to what he expected, that he was denied access to this information, denied the most basic kind of information about where and how UFOs are being studied and being developed in kind of various projects. So Kennedy really tried to take this issue under direct control and came up with a number of initiatives, and I described these various initiatives in the book. And the last one was to cooperate with the Soviet Union in joint lunar missions, which, again, is a big surprise, because most Americans think, well, wasn't Kennedy the one that launched the space race? Well, in fact, after the kind of Kennedy taking that initiative to have a space race with the Soviets to go to the moon, he also wanted to cooperate with them in doing a joint lunar mission. And based on the research that I did, that was directly a result of him wanting to gain access to UFO files and having joint missions with the Soviet Union in space and to the moon would have been a means by which these files, which were kept very closely guarded by a branch of the CIA, that these files would have been released to various government agencies, and eventually the President Kennedy himself would have gained access. And those are the facts I detail in the book.
Well, you know, Dr. Sala, one has to wonder what the world and the United States would have been like if President Kennedy had not been assassinated. We wouldn't have probably not gone to the Vietnam War. All those tens of thousands of American lives and tens of thousands of Vietnamese lives who were lost during that war would be living today. The other thing that could have happened is that, of course, we would have had full disclosure regarding UFOs, and we might have had a very, very different kind of country, and I think arguably a much better one than we have today.
Yes, exactly. I agree with you there, Ted. It would have been a very different country. But I think history has a way of kind of repeating the opportunities lost by a previous or not taken up by a previous generation. And those things
right.
you mentioned were all things that were very possible during the Kennedy administration. And actually, there's a date. He actually mentioned the date, February 1st of 1964, which would have been shortly after he began his second term of office, if things had worked out as he planned. That was the date that he had actually given to the CIA director to release the secret UFO file to NASA and then being shared with other government agencies such as the State Department. And that would have set off a chain of events which would have eventually led to disclosure, as you mentioned. And, of course, also there would have been cooperation with the Soviet Union in outer space and the moon. And so that would have brought an end to the Cold War and Vietnam also. Kennedy was opposed to that. So all of these things were very possible back then. But unfortunately, the assassination brought all that to a heart-stopping end. But now, more than 50, just over 50 years later, I think we are at a point in our history, kind of almost two generations later, where those same possibilities are presenting themselves. And that's why I'm very happy to be involved in what's happening here in Hawaii with the Star Visitor Sanctuary being created and the Hawaiian Kingdom being behind that. And what I'm seeing elsewhere in the world with the incredible information revolution that is taking place in front of our eyes as more and more information than ever before is being released. And I think a lot of the information that has come forward through various whistleblowers and leaked documents and sympathetic government officials that are behind all this is probably no small part due to Kennedy himself, because a lot of these people that are involved in these issues at the senior level, they know what happened. They know that this was an unconstitutional coup, that a president of the United States was eliminated because he wanted to basically bring all of this information under constitutional oversight and control. and that he was prevented. And I think that there are a lot of very good people in various branches of the U.S. government that want to redress that historic wrong. And I think that's why we have so many whistleblowers and so many leaked documents that have come forward. And the truth is there. It's out there. If anyone is open and paying attention, they can find the truth. And so I think we are at a point in our history where eventually the whole planet is going to be made aware of these very important issues and the truth behind them.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Sella, and that's a wonderful positive thought to think about. I think, I know we've only got, we have enough time to discuss it, I think, but if you could, in 10 words or less, just joking, if you could give a brief thumbnail sketch of what happened since World War II and the kind of events leading up to Kennedy's death. Now, what I was thinking of is, of course, after the atomic explosions in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan, I think that was a red flag to a lot of extraterrestrial races outside of this planet that, hey, something's going on, and we now have the capability to blow up the planet, which, of course, sparked their interest. And then the culminating in the visits with the extraterrestrials in 1953, I believe, with President Eisenhower. Could you explain a little bit about that and what happened from what you've written about?
Sure, in 10 words or less, no problem. Operation Paperclip is a good place to start because what that involved was the repatriation of Nazi technologies and scientists that had been working on very sophisticated projects, and some of these projects included flying saucers, and that the Nazi Germany had in fact established contact and probably were the very first to establish some kind of diplomatic agreement with extraterrestrials. So with the defeat of the Nazi Germans, Project Paperclip involved the repatriation of a lot of these technologies to the United States, and that was taken to various places and eventually all taken to a new area in the 1950s called Area 51 that had been approved by President Eisenhower. And in time, all of these secret technologies that had been repatriated from the Nazis that involved flying saucers and extraterrestrial information, all of that was taken to Area 51, and it was under the control of the CIA, and President Eisenhower approved it. President Eisenhower, as you mentioned, he had his own kind of experiences with extraterrestrials in 1954, 1955, and what happened was that he realized that this was an issue that really needed to be managed very, very carefully, and so he approved the creation of an area where these issues would be studied under the auspices of a committee of experts called Majestic 12. They're called something else today, and that I'm not familiar with their current name. But back then they were called Majestic 12, and Eisenhower was aware of them and gave the approval for them to take control of these issues. But what happened was that towards the end of his second term, Eisenhower realized that he was cut out of the loop, that Majestic 12 had more or less monopolized information and was basically really keeping everything to itself, not sharing it with the Office of the Presidency. And so Eisenhower was very angry with that, and he tried to have Majestic 12 share the information. Unfortunately, he was unsuccessful in that. And so by the end of his second term, he was very frustrated with the way in which the extraterrestrial issue is being managed. And so he told President-elect Kennedy what had happened. And behind his military-industrial complex speech, that famous Theory of Wealth speech he gave, what he was really talking about was the military-industrial extraterrestrial complex. He didn't use that word extraterrestrial, that's really what he was talking about.
Absolutely fascinating. Now, I have heard reports that in 1959, President Eisenhower became so frustrated with the CIA and being out of the loop, And he had heard that some of the bases which had been established at Area 51, for example, Area 52, Area 53, Area 54, which is almost never talked about, and S4, are staffed entirely by extraterrestrials, in which humans are not allowed there, even though us taxpayers built and paid for those bases.
Well, that's right. It, at Area 51, there are different locations with varying levels of secret projects. And the place that you just mentioned, S4, is actually just about 10 miles away from what most people consider to be Area 51, which is a top secret facility for developing spy planes that the Air Force and the CIA collaborated in. But that 10 miles away from that complex is another more secretive complex located within the Papoose Mountains, and that this complex is where they have various extraterrestrial craft and also extraterrestrial entities working and living. And you mentioned that some of these areas are off-limits for humans, and so that really is an important thing to keep in mind, that there are certain areas where it's just extraterrestrials at a U.S. military facility.
Well, so for nearly 60 years, we've had bases known by certain sectors of our government which are completely off-limits to our military, completely off-limits to humans. Who knows what goes on there? But yet we paid for the facilities and probably maintain their electricity as well. I don't know. In 1959, I've heard reports that President Eisenhower had considered sending the U.S. 6th Army from Colorado into Area 51 to take control of it because he wasn't getting any answers from the CIA.
That's correct. He actually did, Ted, threaten to have the 1st Army that was based in Colorado take over Area 51. And so that way he was able to extract some cooperation from the Majestic 12 people who relented and allowed a couple of CIA agents to go into the facility and do a tour and basically report back to the president. So that's information that was recently released at the disclosure hearing in Washington, D.C. that was run by Stephen Bassett last year, and also that Linda Moulton Howe had reported on the same whistleblower back over 10 years ago. Talking about this kind of information. But, yes, certainly Eisenhower had to threaten to use the Army to take control of Area 51 because he wasn't getting answers to the questions he was raising. But, unfortunately, President Kennedy was not able to do the same thing as Eisenhower because, essentially, the Army hated Kennedy. The Army saw Kennedy as this young, brash person that really didn't understand the way the military operated. But they couldn't do that with Eisenhower. Eisenhower knew the military very well, and so they respected him. And so when he threatened to use the military, Majestic 12 listened. But with Kennedy, Majestic 12 knew that they had the top brass under their thumb, and so Kennedy couldn't do what Eisenhower did, which is why the result with Kennedy was so tragic in its end, as opposed to what happened with Eisenhower.
Sure. The interesting thing is, Dr. Sala, is now it's almost 60 years later, and people wonder why we have such tremendous problems in the country and also within the government, too. I mean, even people who support President Obama nowadays, I think they would certainly admit that there's problems within his administration. And we've had nearly 60 years now of nothing but cover-ups, and I would argue lies as well. And people don't know what's going on half the time with many of our government agencies, and it's based upon this legacy of fear and also, I think, of secrecy that started way back in the 1950s. In your book, I was just curious. You know, the good thing about your message, though, Dr. Sala, is that we have another opportunity now to turn things around and to do things right that we had back in the early 60s.
Correct, yes. Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful.
I think it's important to emphasize that, Ted, that we have an opportunity to redo the historic injustice. And I think it's kind of honoring President Kennedy's legacy as well, that he had a legacy that he established in terms of confronting the power elite, confronting those that wanted to keep all this information secret. And it really was the establishment of the New World Order where a lot of this information, knowledges would be kept from the public arena and secretly developed as part of a kind of parallel or breakaway civilization, as you like. And so Kennedy didn't want that to happen. He was certainly fighting hard to prevent that from happening. Even though he was unsuccessful, I mean, part of his legacy is that he sacrificed his life to do what he felt was the right thing. And so this is the same opportunity we have now. Maybe that doesn't make as much, maybe that, you know, for the general public, that doesn't mean that much. But for those that are listening to this program, that work with various government agencies or maybe are directly involved with some of these secret programs, it means a lot. It means that you know, they have a responsibility now to basically step forward and redress or redo this historic injustice.
I want to quickly just mention to my many listeners in the United States, Canada, and around the world that you're listening to Out of This World Radio International with your host, Ted Marr, and on our interesting, very interesting and wonderful guest, Dr. Michael Sala, who's a wonderful, excellent UFO researcher who's written several very, very interesting books. For those who'd like to call in with any questions for Dr. Sala, the studio phone number here is area code 425-373-5527, and would it be all right if people call in with any questions, Dr. Sala?
Of course. I'm very happy
okay.
to answer questions.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, there's something else. There's so many questions I have for you. Next time, I'd love to have you back, and we'll talk for 2 hours and not just one, because you have so much interesting material that you've written about. But one of the questions I wanted to ask is that there was a memo that Edwin Snowden released, I believe it was last year, and he had said in his memo that these creepy gray aliens actually control sectors of the U.S. government. Have you heard about his memo, or what's your comments on that?
Okay, all right. Well, yes, the Snowden NSA document leaks are very important. So far, he's only released one document that explicitly raises the UFO issue. This is a document on training covert operatives conducting online operations to deceive the public. And in this document, there were four UFOs, historic UFOs, dating from the 1950s up until the present time. And what that document showed was that online operatives in Britain, the United States, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, that they are trained to use UFOs as part of their disinformation program. Now, exactly how they do that, we don't know from the document that was released, but we do know that this is UFOs are part of covert online deception programs that are being currently run by the NSA and its international partners. Now, in terms of this specific document that you mentioned, it sounds as though that may have been someone actually really putting a spin or exaggerating what Snowden has released or what is yet to be released, because so far, aside from that one document that I mentioned, there has not been any other document from the Snowden releases that it directly addresses the UFO issue.
Interesting. There were reports about 4 or 5 months ago, and it came interestingly enough from the Iranian news agency, and re-sent out by the Russian news agency that basically the U.S. government, sectors of it were run by the gray reptilians. And I've been interested in the subject ever since. It's hard to get straight facts on that. And so I know you do a lot of research into this, and I was kind of interested in your take on that.
Well, actually, yes. Now that you mentioned the FARS news agency release, what happened there was that like two separate things were kind of run together. The Snowden document releases and a speech by Paul Hellyer, or an interview by Paul Hellyer to Russia Today or RT News, where he talked about the tall whites and he talked about how there were agreements that had been reached between the U.S. government and the tall whites, and how the tall whites were basically involved in running the things behind the scene. And so this is the FARS news agency. Or their spin on that particular story, where they basically said that this is evidence that the United States is actually run by evil aliens or tall white aliens. So there were two separate things that were run together there in that story by the FARC news agency. There's another source that's gained a lot of notoriety in the UFO field, which is Saoirse Fale. And he was the, he or she was the actual source for that information that the Snowden documents talked about these evil aliens manipulating the United States. But no, that wasn't correct. It was kind of running together, as I said, two separate issues.
I see. Okay, well, thanks for explaining that, Dr. Casella, because I was interested in that. For my listeners, for people just tuning in, this is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting on KKNW, 1150 AM here in Seattle, Washington, in the United States. I think it'd be useful for our listeners to know that there are many different alien groups out there. And from what I know, and probably, Dr. Sella, you know quite a bit more than I do because of all your wonderful research. But there's two main groups that I know of. One's called the Galactic Alliance of Planets, which are mostly human, mostly benevolent, who actually we were seeded from them, and that they do want to help us out. And then there's an alternative group, a diametrically opposed group, if you will, of aliens called, I loosely call them the Reptilians or the Draco Empire, who are more lizard-based, including the Greys. And those are the ones that Eisenhower signed this treaty with in 1954. Do you know the details of that treaty, Dr. Sella?
Well, I know that there were several meetings that President Eisenhower had in 1954. That was the first meeting, and that was just before the testing of the Bravo hydrogen bomb on March 1st of 1954. And that the second meeting took place at Holloman Air Force Base, but it looks as though there were a separate group of extraterrestrials involved in that one. And that second meeting, I believe, is where agreements were reached. I believe that the first meeting was this a more kind of positive alliance type of extraterrestrial along that first grouping that you mentioned that were more positive and wanting to help humanity, and that Eisenhower's advisors at the time declined that offer of help because simply they justified the hydrogen bomb program as something that was essential to U.S. national security, and they didn't want to give it up, even though the extraterrestrials were pointing out the dangers in that program. And so the second group of extraterrestrials, whether they are directly a part of the Reptilian Empire or kind of like covertly being manipulated by them, seem to involve a group of tall grays or tall whites that reached agreements with the Eisenhower administration. And shortly after that, we start having stories of abductions, stories of people being taken up into craft by small gray aliens and being examined. And so this can be dated to that period immediately after these agreements had been reached with the U.S. government. Or a faction of it had secretly agreed to working with extraterrestrials, and in exchange for the extraterrestrials being given rights to land and have bases in U.S. territory and in particularly military installations, and for conducting biological experiments and extracting resources from the United States, that the extraterrestrials would help with the technology acquisition programs that the U.S. military was secretly developing.
So for all those millions of people out there on this planet who've been abducted, perhaps tortured, perhaps even eaten by some of these gray reptilian aliens, you have gone through hell, in some instances, in order to advance the military technology of the United States. And it's interesting how people have reported on UFOs for many years in the past, and all our federal government, in response to the UFO phenomenon, has tried their best to hide it. And I don't think that's fair to the American people. I think it's dishonest. I wish they would come clean and just tell us the truth. What's wrong with telling the truth to people?
Exactly, Ted. And it's interesting that when it comes to the abduction phenomenon that it's mainly concentrated in the United States. And you have to ask, well, why is that? Well, is it because the United States is basically the hub for these agreements that have been reached, particularly with extraterrestrials? And yes, this information, people have a right to know what's going on. And as I mentioned before, the information is out there. People can get access to the information. So it's now it's now a matter of people getting beyond the ridicule factor of overcoming this kind of decades-long program of ridiculing this information. An official statement by the government, that might still be a long time in coming because officially I don't think many people that are elected to high office know anything about this. You know, the control of these programs has been kind of sequestered away in these secretive committees who have need-to-know access to this information and who make all the decisions that, you know, even someone as powerful as a president or the Senate majority leader, you know, none of these people actually are in the loop on this issue. Even the CIA director and even the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, all the most powerful officers in the United States, none of these people have access to this information. So when we're talking about, okay, you know, we have the public has a right to know who and what is doing this and why is the U.S. involved in this, you know, most of the elected officials or senior appointed officials, they don't know themselves. And so that's part of the process here that you're doing with your program, that I'm doing with my books and websites, that we are putting information out there for people so that eventually enough people will kind of mobilize around this. That'll be like a civil rights movement. It'll be like so many people will be angry at what has happened because they'll know the truth of it. And they'll mobilize, they'll kind of do their march on Washington, D.C. and so forth and demand the truth. And then politicians will get their courage to actually take this issue on because they'll be able to say, well, you know, look at our public is demanding it. Our constituency is demanding that we take action here. And so they'll dig to the bottom of it. But right now, any politician, no matter how powerful he is, if he tries to dig into this issue, he just gets warned off. And that has worked up until the moment, the present moment.
Well, I firmly believe, Dr. Sella, that if the people lead, eventually the leaders will follow. And waiting for Washington, D.C. or to do anything is you're going to wait a long time, of course. I want my many listeners around the world to remember that there are some main differences between the two alien groups that I know of that I've read about. The Galactic Alliance is based upon love and service to others. Whereas the reptilians, the Dracos, of which our government is in a treaty with and has been for the last 60 years, is based upon service to self and negativity. And it's no wonder if you look at the history of the United States and the world since the mid-50s, we've had war after war after war. The Vietnam War, various skirmishes in the 80s, Gulf War I, Gulf War II. Now we're involved in, our military is involved in 130 different conflicts around the world. It doesn't seem to matter that our economy is faltering. We're having a lot of trouble here in this country. There always seems to be money for more weapons. And I think this feeds a lot of negativity around the world. And I just don't understand why people can't get along. And you can see the influence, I think, of these reptilians upon our government and upon the world for the last 60 years because we've just had nothing but trouble. Absolutely nothing but trouble. And from what I've read, these reptilians feed off negativity. They feed off war. And so it helps them for us to be in total conflict all the time. But I agree with you, Dr. Sella, that now is a time, history does repeat itself. This is a time, as in 1962 and 63, with former President Kennedy, that we have an opportunity now to make a real change in the planet. Nostradamus, back in the 16th century, said that we would be entering 1,000 years of peace and spiritual prosperity, a golden age, starting in the 2030s and 2040s, which is not that far off now. You're talking maybe 15 years. I still think Nostradamus is right about that. I think we're having some difficulty now, but I think the future for all of humanity around the world is very, very bright.
I agree, Ted. I think that so many people are now putting out the truth to the world, and people for the first time can get access to all what's really happening out there, and they can make informed choices. And we're seeing that, you know, we're seeing that now. Even with this crash of the Malaysian Airlines over a part of the Ukraine, people are now starting to question, was this a false flag operation? Is this an example of both sides being manipulated by a third force? And I'm really kind of glad to see how false flag operations has entered the political lexicon now so that when these kind of major international events happen, such as a downing of an aircraft or the killing of a prominent politician or whatever it is, that people are now saying they're looking beyond the kind of conventional explanations that the mass media comes up with and looks for a deeper explanation as to possibly a third force manipulating both sides to create these kinds of tragedies to perpetuate war, as you said. And behind that, I think, you know, when we're talking about the third force in international politics, manipulating both sides in conflict to create these dead-end wars, you know, who is that third force? And, I think, we actually start to look at some dark or some negative extraterrestrials involved in that, and it goes right up the dark hierarchy there.
Right. Well, here's something interesting I want to share with you. Next month, I'm having on Laura Eisenhower, President Eisenhower's daughter, who will talk about UFOs and the agreements that her father signed. At the end of August, on August 29th, I have a gentleman named coming in who's a photographer in Washington, D.C., and his specialty is taking pictures at night using night vision technology. He has 60,000 to 70,000 images, he says, of various UFOs around the Capitol, including UFO craft landing and taking off from the White House lawn. This is not a joke. He's got it. He's got the pictures of it. And during that same show, I will have two representatives from the Galactic Alliance who said they would identify those craft. I suspect that those craft are reptilian craft coming to visit the president, but I can't prove it. But we will have photographic proof at the end of August. Will be and everyone who listens to my program will be able to see that proof. But I think there's a lot going on that people don't realize. I'm sure, Dr. Sella, you know Scott Limriel, the author of the Say Race Agenda.
Yes.
That book, I think, is very interesting. Would you like to tell my listeners a little bit about it, what you know of it?
Well, Scott does a really good job in basically expressing some things that he personally experienced and that he was given information about in a fictional format. So people can read his book, The Sarah's Agenda, which is a very entertaining book, written as fiction, but it's based on fact. And I can say that, yes, definitely the things that he talks about in there are very factually based. And the kind of future that he envisages, I think that is very important for people to start to kind of embrace this positive vision of the future where both sides have been manipulated. Because this is one of the things that most people tend to overlook. They tend to think, well, you know, there's a bad guy and there's a good guy. Well, the bad guys are also manipulated. They've been manipulated behind the scenes by even more ruthless, more sinister and kind of hidden forces. And so what Scott's book does is it really kind of highlights that, you know, those are the victims and those are the aggressors, that even the aggressors, they themselves are also victims. And so at the end of the day, it's all about forgiveness. It's all about coming to a place where you can embrace the other without fear, without any kind of hesitation that these are our brothers and sisters. And, you know, and for a lot of people, this will be a challenge because if they've had some direct personal injury, whether it's through an abduction or whether it's through any kind of negative encounter with an ET, I mean, people have had positive encounters. I mean, for them, the future is, there's nothing to be frightened about. It's just embracing this positive potential. But for those who have had some kind of negative experience, Scott's book basically tells us that this is an opportunity to basically forgive, to let go of that negative experience because those beings that did the manipulation are themselves victims of a even more kind of sinister manipulation. And at the end of the day, we can all come together and really build a bright new world.
In my private conversations with Scott regarding his excellent book called The Say Race Agenda, and I urge everyone out there to try to get a copy of it, and if you'd like to, I've interviewed Scott several times in my program, and if you'd like to listen to the audio from that interview, please go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. He tells me that he thought that Hitler and the Nazis were actually manipulated by the reptilians to kill off 6 million Jews and other people. And if the Nazis actually had won, the reptilians would have used Hitler and the Nazis to kill off even more people. The ultimate goal, he said, of the reptilians is to reduce our population on this planet by at least 90% to make it a more manageable slave race.
Well, yes, and this is the dark agenda, and that's one of the things that he talks about in the book as being really something very relevant to our current situation, and that indeed, through the different whistleblowers I've been interviewing and the information I've reached, that indeed is a kind of a real possibility that there's a dark agenda to kind of like really decimate the planet and by as much as 90%. And so this is something that we all have to be mindful of, and why we have to be very careful as to what things are allowed to play themselves out at the international arena. And we need to basically make sure that there's no opportunity for another major war involving big powers such as the United States or Russia and China. And I think this is something that we are witnessing now, that even though there has been in the Ukraine and in parts of the Pacific, there have been instances where there has been conflict between the major powers, that so far they've been able to kind of like move through these without getting into any armed hostilities. So that way, I think any kind of major war is unlikely to happen. And so that kind of very dark agenda of up to 90% or more of the population being wiped out, that I think is going to be frustrated. And then, as Scott says, when that dark agenda is defeated and a light agenda sweeps into the planet, then everything kind of gets lit up and people see what they have done, that it was all a result of manipulation. And so everyone has an opportunity to change their ways, including those at the heart of the negativity now, which, according to Scott, is the draconian reptilian.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think if you ask generally the people of this world don't want another war. They certainly don't want another nuclear war. They don't want any conflict. I mean, who could be in their right mind to be in favor of war, killing off hundreds of thousands or even millions of people? Nobody that I know of, anyway. And this goes too. You kind of wonder though what goes through the minds of some politicians. For example, in Japan, and I know I have listeners and people in Japan listening to my program today. Shinzo Abe, the prime minister there, with all due respect, before he was elected, he was a proponent of solar energy and wind energy and shutting down all the nuclear power plants in Japan. After he gets elected, he becomes a proponent of nuclear power, and his government's done nothing to shut down the Fukushima reactors. The reactors still are pumping out 85,000 gallons of highly radioactive water out into the Pacific every day, but there's no plans by his government to shut them down. Now, that's undoubtedly will have an effect upon the world and its ecosystems, but from what Scott tells me, the Galactic Alliance has stepped in and cleaned up much of the radiation in and around Japan and across the Pacific, too. So we are getting outside help. For example, there was a huge plume of radioactivity in water from Fukushima that was headed for the coast of Washington here on the West Coast a couple months ago, and it simply disappeared. There's no radiation now in the water, and everybody's scratching their head saying, well, what happened to it? Well, according to Scott, we had outside help to clean it up. So I don't believe in doom and gloom theories for the future of humanity. I think our future is very bright, and I believe in what Nostradamus said, that in a very short amount of time, we will enter a golden age where we will truly have a paradise on Earth here.
Yes, I agree with that entirely, Ted. And I think, paradise, where does it begin? I think it begins in small pockets, small places, such as the area that I'm living at now in Hawaii, where there is this progressive community that are building a larger community based on their ideals. And we're seeing this unfold, and of course this is the very same community that has now opened itself up to extraterrestrial visitors, star visitors, and I think this is the way it'll happen. There will be little pockets such as Sedona, Mount Shasta, other progressive places in the United States and other parts of the world. That'll be the kind of first places where this high potential, this new world will take seed, and I think it'll just spread out. that are spread out as a kind of positive influence, something to inspire people all around the world once they learn about this. And this is something to look forward to, definitely.
Well, absolutely. And I want everyone around in the United States, Canada, around the world to remember that the white light is much stronger than the dark. Sure, we have tough times now. I don't think there's ever been a time in human history where we haven't faced challenges. But with each time, the positive thing to remember is that we've always been able to overcome whatever challenges face us. And I believe we'll be overcoming the tremendous challenges we face now with Fukushima, with pollution, with the climate change, global warming, all kinds of things, with the conflicts in the Middle East, and I think we will overcome those, and eventually we will enter a golden age. It's going to take some work, of course, but everyone has to keep positive, and I believe that we will get help, outside help, to achieve a golden age here on the planet.
I agree with you, said wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Dr. Sala. We're getting close to the end here, and I wanted to mention to my many listeners, please stay tuned. In about 10 minutes' time, we'll have Catherine Mitchell on. She's one of the best psychics in New York. She'll be coming to us live from Long Island. And for those interested in Dr. Sala's many wonderful books, please go to my radio website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. Or, Dr. Sala, could you please give out your website as well for people so they could look up more information about your wonderful work?
Sure. Exopolitics.org. That's spelled EXOPOLITICS.org. And they'll find all the information on upcoming conference appearances and so forth. And I want to thank you, Ted, for creating a space for me to come onto your show and talk a little bit about my research. I'm really grateful for all you do to bring this information to the world.
Well, my pleasure, Dr. Sala. I'd like to give you the floor for the next minute or two. We've got about 2 minutes left, and I want you to give the concluding comments on your wonderful interview today.
Sure. Well, I think people really can take heart that the information is out there. Just go and start reading what is available. And the truth will basically be made clear with the various sources that are out there. Just develop enough awareness of what is accurate information and what is inaccurate information. We definitely need to have our filters on and exercise our discernment. But for those that have discernment, for those that are seeking the truth, it is out there. And as you become more aware of what is really going on, then you're in a position to basically let others know and to help create this new world where we make it possible for extraterrestrial information to be freely shared. And eventually, within our lifetime, Ted, and to the audience, I think that everyone will have an opportunity to meet with extraterrestrial visitors and to basically have that information and that kind of cosmic potential unfolded to them. So, again, I want to thank you all for listening in and to Ted for making it possible for me to be on the show.
Wonderful, Dr. Sala. Well, I'd love to have you back in on September. I'll give you a call later. We'll work out another time.
Be happy to come back. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being on, Dr. Sala. And we'll be going here in a few minutes to live by telephone to Long Island, New York, to Catherine Mitchell, one of the best psychics in New York. And thank you so much for listening. You're listening to Out of This World with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW 1150 here in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington.